Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and welcome to episode 165, the best of 2017 of the Applog Podcast. I'm your host, Simon Head. Today's podcast, like most and all of them, are brought to you in part by Bo's All Natural Brewing. Check out Lugtread. It's crisp, balanced, and refreshing. Lugtread is a lagered ale. It's a term they coined. It's fermented like an ale and cold aged like a lager. It's been Bo's flagship brand since they opened in 2006. And as of 2017, now 2018, it's available in 355 milliliter cans for the first time. And it's won over 20 awards. Check out Kissemeyer Nordic Pale Ale, the Wag the Wolf, which is part of the Wild Oats series, and the full-time IPA, which is hoppy, fruity, and bold. That's right. I mean, when you're labeling a beer, it's hoppy, fruity, and bold. I guess beer snobs think that's good. It sounds strange to me. It's hoppy. It's hoppy, fruity, and bold. Whatever. I digress. It's their newest full-time brand, which is how they got the name. It's medium-bodied ale, and it finishes dry with lingering hop and fruit notes. So pick up Bose anywhere beer is sold nationwide in Canada, or go to bose.ca for more info on the great products they have. Hey, Amazon shoppers. I actually really got to thank all the Amazon shoppers this past couple of months who've shopped, and there's been over like 40 sales this past month. Thank you for doing that. Keep it going, though. It's not just because it's Christmas. If you want to help the show out and support the show by shopping on Amazon, go to applog.ca/Amazon or applog.ca/US Amazon. And if you want to do it the old-fashioned way, go to applog.ca and click on the banners located on the right side, locate your country, and bookmark all those links. And every time you shop on Amazon, you can use those links and shop and support the show. It costs you no extra money. And if you want to help the show out on a monthly basis, go to patreon.com/applog. You can pledge as much or as little as you want on a monthly basis to help with hosting and gas fees. Cancel at any time. You can still buy a t-shirt by going to applog.ca/shop. They're running out again. You can go buy the Foursquare discography for $20. And iTunes. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review the show. And give it 5 stars, please. Like the show on Facebook by going to facebook.com/applogpod. Follow me on Twitter at SimonHead666. Today on the show is the best of. It's snippets. And every time I'm doing an interview over the year, I usually hit this little memory button and it remembers the spot in the show I was doing the interview. I take it and I put it into another folder and I file it away. And somewhere around November, I start sorting through it all, finding it out, the best parts of the show. And there's like, you know, there's over 50, you know, snippets on here. So I asked my old friend Lee McCormick, who also runs a podcast called Tramps Like Us Podcast. It's a Bruce Springsteen podcast, as well as a music podcast, basically. He not only does Bruce Springsteen stuff, but he has a thing called Sidecast, which is talking about, you know, memories of, you know, rock and roll shows and things like that. It's a very fun show, and I helped him put it together, so I'm proud of it. He does one every 2 weeks. Go to Tramps Like Us Podcast on iTunes and follow his show. But like I said, Lee came up, we had a beer, we listened to these snippets, we picked out the best ones, had a conversation, and went on and talked about more about that stuff. And you can listen to Lee's podcast every other week and my podcast every week. And here he is, Lee McCormick, talking about the best of snippets on the Applog Podcast. Okay, we're recording. We are live, but I don't think we need to push the fact that we're going live. We don't need to do that.
Well, it's live right here.
It's live. Yeah. It's live, Lee.
We're live.
Definitely, we're live. Lee McCormick, old friend of mine. Gosh, how long now?
Late 80s, early 90s, maybe?
Yeah, Pickering. We both had a friend in John Cars, I think, which is how we kind of knew each other. We got to meet because Mike Cars was in my grade.
Well, I was hanging around the scene earlier than that, though.
Mm-hmm.
Like 5 foot nothing guys when you were with
Kingpin.
Yeah. I remember seeing a show at a barn, like somewhere up north. Like
that was
a barn.
Oh, you know where that was? That was next door to where I eventually moved.
Right.
Yeah. Well, okay. As a 17-year-old kid, and who else moved? That was Les Berman's house.
Maybe. That would be great. 9th grade town. That's before Johnny Carr's days.
Yeah, okay, so that was Les Berman, and we had a band called Black Faith.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we played a song called Black Faith. Yeah, you saw that show?
I don't know if that's the one.
Yeah, it would have been, if it was in a barn.
There's a few shows in a barn.
Well, thanks for coming on the show, man.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man. I mean, you're one of the rare folks that actually make the drive up to my house.
That's only a half hour drive, man. Yeah. Half hour this way, half hour that way.
That's true. That's true.
I can either go to Oshawa, I can go to Toronto, or I can go to Uxbridge.
That's true. And I'm glad we're doing this.
When you say Ottawa, I'm in Oshawa.
Yeah. I'm glad because 99% of the podcasts I do are online. And you can get a good sense of conversation that way. But it's much better when we're in the same room and we can actually have an actual conversation. And some people get weirded out with the headphones and a microphone and stuff like that, but you're a podcaster.
I enjoy the sound of my own voice.
Yeah, right? With the headphones, and you can get in there and modulate.
Yeah.
I mean, I tell you, podcasting stopped me from writing songs, which I think might be actually a good thing in a way. You know, it got me into something more artistic where I could actually appreciate different art forms, and speech is part of that. I mean, it's a dying art. Nobody really talks anymore.
Yeah, and it's you find too that when you're recording yourself, you have to speak a little better. You know, you try not to say and repeat words a lot.
Yeah, well, I do spots now. I have a beer sponsorship, so I have to like be on it, man. When I do my spots, I'm getting good at it. Actually, there's a lot of times on it. But your show, we were just talking about before we started recording that your show has a lot of production value, you know.
Well, that's the thing I've been getting into more, instead of just talking about the subject, is it like putting in the music behind to accentuate the what we're talking about, you know, or we'll talk about some song and then like play the song and
it's kind of like you guys in a part like in your living room and you're like, I like this, so you just play a record, you know, just condensing it into like that part of the conversation. Because how many times you've been sitting there and go, you know, you should listen to this and this and that, and then you put it on records and you hear it with your buddies.
Yeah.
And that's sort of the feeling I get with your podcast. And it's
well, like the people say they do podcasts for their listeners. I kind of do it for myself, right? Like,
me too.
I like to listen to it. Like, I like to put together this little program where I'm talking about a certain subject and then listen back to it. And here I am talking with my friends about this and playing some tunes in there.
It's the point that you can create something, and you're doing it once every other week, and I'm doing it once a week, and it's like, it's an achievement. It's like people go out and play hockey, and they have fun playing hockey, and it's sort of like, to me, that's what I like about it, is that there's a purpose, you know, of this is what I'm going to do, this is my hobby, you know, and I love stuff, you know, doing stuff. I mean, I don't know, it seems like as a musician, you sort of do stuff for like other reasons, but the podcast is a whole other thing. It's a whole other thing for me.
You know? It's very selfish, and you can just do whatever you want, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's the best part, you know, and I'm 165 episodes in now.
See, that's amazing, right? Like, I'm probably like early 50s, 52. That's like 80 hours worth of content.
Yeah. And you are almost in your second year coming in, right?
What about
second,
2 years,
2 years in March?
February started. February, March, February 2016 I started.
It's an amazing, I mean, the fact that, like, I've met people who say, I want to do a podcast, and go, I'll help you in any way possible because I love the art form. I love the fact that, you know for all the reasons we just spoke about. But it's tough getting people sort of on board with it, because once they realize, like, this is actually a bit of a thing here, you know,
it is a bit of work, and you gotta, like, what's the word I'm looking for? You gotta decide what you're gonna do, and you gotta stick to it, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I've decided to do this thing. My shows are gonna be like about 90 minutes and every 2 weeks, so now it's like, you gotta do a show, you gotta keep it up, you know?
Yeah.
And then also the quality level too. Like, I've established this is how I wanna do my show, so I can't just half ass put something out there now, right?
No, you don't. And you have I can see your numbers. They're pretty good. I mean, like,
you know, I've never checked my numbers.
I do. I check your numbers all the time.
I've never checked it once.
It's amazing. You can tell when the episodes come out, because there's that healthy spike.
That,
like,
bump, yeah.
Yeah, that bump of numbers. And it's very, I mean, honestly, just for me, I put out an episode and I don't even advertise it, and I get a good number count. It's like, wow, this is something. This is an achievement, you know? And that's,
I thought about it, but then I'm like, if the number is really good or if the number is really bad, it's not going to affect how I'm going to do it anyways.
So. No, but it feels good that you're getting something you're doing actually coming back to you, you know? And that's,
the one thing I like is I've gotten some feedback from some actual people, some emails and stuff like that. Like, one guy was like a, who's in the military, and he was overseas from Canada, and he said he likes to listen to my show when he's overseas, misses his family, because he hears my accent.
Yeah, and he loves
Springsteen, right?
So Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Somebody said on the American iTunes thing, it's like, Canadians talking about 90s punk rock with wicked Canadian accents. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
It's like...
Well, I used to think I sounded like a dumb hoser, right?
Well, we do.
Then I realized people dig that, right? Mm-hmm. Chicks, too. I've had some chicks that are like, oh, I love the Canadian accent.
Wow, I wonder why. Because if you're a dude looking at chicks with that hoser accent from like Sudbury, you're like, eh.
It's true, yeah.
Eh, maybe not.
Got to twist it a little way.
So we're doing a best of. And what I did is every time I'm doing an episode, I would make a little marker on the Pro Tools session. And whenever I got back at the end of the episode, I would take the snippet and I would sum it into a different folder. And then I would put it all together. And I don't know if you noticed this, but it's actually alphabetical. So because that's the way my folder system separates all the
stuff. Can't do it chronological by date.
You could,
but... That would be more appropriate for a best of 2017.
Could be or it could be not.
I guess you just want random anyway.
It's random. Like, this is over the period of a year. And it's some to me, it's some of it summarizes a lot, and some of it's just like epiphanies where people have a little mini, like, whoa, I never even thought of that, yeah, you know, and you can feel that they're like, oh, this is something I'm coming up with now on the spot.
In the middle of a conversation.
Yeah. And it happens to me a lot when I'm doing the show. It's like, I feel that it's like, oh, I had never even really thought of it that way, but it's kind of simple and you have to sort of talk it out to make things work.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's kind of what the show is about. And we might as well just start. Let's start one. Right. Brandon Kellum, he talks about his success, about success in music. Here it is.
Winning isn't signing to the biggest label and making the most money in the world. Winning is just being able to go out there and have these experiences. And anything else that comes your way, I mean, we're always surprised by getting show offers and getting tour offers and whatever it is. Every time that comes along, that's just like an added cherry on top, you know?
Yeah.
All we expect is to have a place to plug in. It doesn't matter if it's a venue or some, you know, abandoned warehouse.
So what do you think of that?
Yeah, it's pretty good. That's what I always wanted to be, a success in the music business, right? Like, you don't want to be famous, or you want to be a success, and whatever that success is to you, right? And I guess he's just saying, like, he just wants to play and he's able to play, so.
Yeah.
Maybe he's setting the bar low.
Well, that's it. I mean, a lot of people come in with low expectations, and the people with lower expectations are as lucky as the ones who have high expectations.
Exactly, yeah.
So, you know, if you come into it with a reasonable outlook and in it to win it kind of thing, sometimes doesn't work, in especially with punk rock.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm gonna be the biggest punk rock band in the world. That's super petty to, like, punk rockers, you know?
Well, so, music is so different these days, man.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's right.
The dream has changed almost, right? Like, the whole rock and roll dream doesn't exist anymore.
It's an interesting way to think about success when you're talking about music, because people don't like guys, like a guy like Mick Jagger walking around today, be like, who, you know what I mean? Like, where'd you get that scar from? Why are you not smiling? There's like certain situations of like how you look at rock stars now. It's a persona that everybody knows everything of each other now.
Well, I wonder what it's like coming from a kid. Like, when I was 5 years old, and I saw Mick Jagger or Gene Simmons or something like that, these guys were superheroes. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, oh, like, could I do that? Could I actually do that? But I wonder how kids look at...
Now they can.
Yeah.
They feel they can. They feel like, this is easy. Look at him. He seems to have a good time. I actually, this is not a musician, but I somehow got onto Andy Dick's Periscope. And Andy Dick Periscopes.
Wrong turn somewhere.
Yeah, he does a Periscope like two or three times a day. And it's him going to Ralph's and buying food. And he's like the most normal guy ever.
That sounds so boring.
But Andy Dick has always been that sort of personified, crazy, nutty, wacky dude. And when you see him in a light where he's just going shopping for groceries, that turns into a, like, oh, maybe.
That's a PR move, man.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean,
let's see what he's doing when the Periscope's not turned on.
Well, I mean, that's the thing, is like, when you want to, but it's funny how you look at it, because I look at it as just being a normal guy.
Yeah.
I always thought Andy Dick was like this crazy, do anything all the time, in rehab, out rehab kind of guy. And that to me mystified who he was. But when you see him shopping for like avocados at Ralph's, it sort of demystifies the thing to me.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think you would ever see Jim Morrison's Periscope him shopping. Well, maybe. shop for avocados like rock stars back in the day.
But if you saw
David Lee Roth, Periscope, like,
yeah, but that's the thing, it ruins it. It ruins the whole thing.
I don't want to see David Lee Roth shopping for food.
No, I want to see David Lee Roth like knee deep in pussy.
Yeah, you know, like, what I mean? Fucking practicing karate or something.
Yeah, like, yeah, yeah. That to me is like, that's what rock stars are all about. And that sort of keys into what you were saying is that, what is success? And what do kids look at people like now when they see Andy Dick shopping for avocados? It's not like the fish, the whatever they call it, the tuna story, whatever the cod story from Led Zeppelin, which is a famous story that maybe it happened, maybe it didn't.
Oh, the shark thing? Yeah.
Oh, yeah,
the mud shark?
The fish, yeah.
At the Riot House, right?
Yeah, something, yeah.
But the thing, though, like when I was a kid, I wanted to be a musician, and that was like almost an obtainable thing. You could be a musician, you could be a rock star, you could get a record deal, right? There was a way to do it. Now I don't know how you would do that, right? Like if I was a 10-year-old kid and I wanted to be a musician.
Yeah, I think people look at it whole differently now because it's like everything's so much more accessible. Art is just, I just want to look at stuff on the internet. Okay, there it is. You know, it's there, I got it. Instant gratification. It used to be a time for waiting. Like when your favorite record came out, there wouldn't be like, I'm going to go download it on Pirate Bay the minute it comes out. It was like, I'm going to wait in the record store. And I'm going to buy the record, and I'm going to take it home and listen to it.
So if you can afford it, I have to save up 2 weeks' allowance, and then I'll beg my dad, can we go to the mall and buy this?
Which mall did you go to? Pickering Town Center? Or Sheridan Mall?
Sheridan Mall, or Cedarbury Mall, maybe.
Yeah. I remember Sheridan Mall, Mr. Music. Was it Mr. Music?
Mr. Sound. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you remember the flea market? Sunday flea market, Sheridan Mall. The guy had all the rock pins, the square pins.
Oh, the guy had the pictures. The guy had the photos. Rock photos.
Yeah.
Is that the same guy?
Probably. It was right. I remember there would be always like 3 or 4 kids deep surrounding this table the whole day, and he had like these felt things, and he had like all the square little rock pins and stuff like that.
The guy I remember would take pictures at, he was a photographer for
For Maple Leaf Gardens concerts and stuff
like that. Exactly. And you'd buy a picture of like Rush playing like the night before or something. You're like, what the hell is that all about? You know what I mean? It's funny. Actually, this kind of segues, I think, into our next bit. Which this is an old friend of mine, Carmelo Loporto, who is he puts out records and he manages people in Germany, and the music industry in Germany is completely opposite to our industry. Although there is a small bridge between the two where they all kind of think the same. Carmelo is one of the good ones.
Carmelo, is he like a Latin dude?
No, his parents are Italian, but he's German.
Italian?
Yeah,
German Italian.
Yeah, his family is Italian. Moved to Germany. He was born in Germany. I always thought he was Italian because he speaks fluent Italian and German. Their son actually is learning both. It's like bilingual Italian Germany.
That's hot.
Yeah, so it's an interesting. His look on the music industry, like he took a chance on me, like a guy was in his mid-30s, he put a record out for me, you know what I mean? Like almost 40, he put a record out for me, and it was like, that's the most amazing thing, and we've been friends for going on 15 years now, so.
All right, Carmelo, good guy.
Talking about the change in music.
The way you have to promote an artist will always be in a constant process of change. Mm-hmm. So if one thing is constant, then it's change. But at the end of the day, you have to do high quality music, high quality art, whatever.
Yeah.
And I think that is what counts.
So he's just talking about, let's go for the quality first and deal with
where you start. You got to have,
the popularity part. But a lot of people think differently than him. They think, how good looking is this kid?
Well, it's the
what good songwriters can I...
Pop star mentality.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I mean, but he works with like artists who are like YouTube sensations that have millions of downloads, and his job is to sort of market it in a way. But he sees the quality first. You know, he also was a punk rocker. Would go in Germany, you go there and buy every record on the merch table, every shirt. Yeah. You spend all your money buying all the merch from the North American bands and stuff. So he has this look about the quality. It's not the marketability. It's the quality, and the quality follows. The markability follows the quality.
The quality will last. If it's a good product, you should be able to work it. You should be able to sell it, right? Like, you got to have songs. Like with music, it's got to be songs. Like think of every band that's ever been big and sustained any kind of longevity. They've had good songs, right? Mm-hmm. Like every genre. You always hear the bands that rise to the top. They always have good songs. And then there's always the bands that...
Yeah.
Fall by the wayside that are like, they don't have good songs, but they're kind of in that genre.
Yeah, right? The one thing I learned about the music industry from like Cam Carpenter, a guy who worked for MCA Records, is that he was around the part when it'd be a team of people. Like it would be like the publicist, the radio person, the manager, yeah, the stylist. They all work together to make that one person a star. Well, that model is dead. Nobody works that way anymore. So it's not like a team of people working. It's one person working their ass off and one other person going to fight for that person. So that part of the industry is kind of like the cream does rise to the top, but it was sort of like you're almost like adjusting the odds back then where, yeah, okay, maybe he's not the prettiest dude. Maybe he's not the best singer, but he writes great songs and let's try to market that and take a chance. So we're going to worry about the look part later. We're going to worry about the other part, but we're going to focus on certain parts. And
That's the credible music business. Like if you look at the pop music business going on now, it's the complete opposite of that, right?
Yeah. But it was kind of like that even in the 80s when you had like, you know, you had your Kisses and your Led Zeppelin, not your Zeppelins, but you know, like that 80 kind of like mentality of rock stars, you know.
Yeah, what do you mean? I'm
talking about. Well, when you're talking about like, we're talking about quality versus marketability. Marketability. I can't say that word. But it used to
be. Well, the 80s was an excessive decade, and that's when you're just trying to sell everything, right?
Yeah.
You're trying to sell Pepsi products with your music.
But even if you were like the greatest musician in the world, you still needed a team behind you to do that. You didn't have social media. You didn't have things like that.
If you wanted to get to this level, there was a way to do it. You can't
do it that way. Yeah. I mean, maybe you could now. Maybe that works, but it's almost like not worth it now. You know, you just be a good songwriter and hope that the cream does rise to the top.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Even a songwriter is not even a viable career anymore. You know, like when I was going to that Steve Earle songwriting Camp Copperhead thing, he talked a lot about that. He's like, a songwriter is almost compared to like a bluegrass player. Like you're this niche thing. If you're a songwriter, you can't really sustain a career being a songwriter these days. Very few people can do it. Whereas like in the 70s and 80s, you could be a songwriter and you could sell songs. But
yeah, well, there's this, I mean, there's the other thing when you go down to, I have friends who go down to Nashville and write music. Yeah. They write like 12 songs in like 10 days. And one might stick, and then they're in. Gordy Sampson, who was with Ashley MacIsaac, wrote like "Jesus Take the Wheel" in the early 2000s, and that's all he does now is write songs. I mean, there's definitely like, I mean, what we're both kind of saying is that the industry is completely,
it's flipped upside down.
Yeah, and we're trying to like get a grasp on it, and we're old dudes, so we're trying to like, well, it takes us longer.
It's
right?
Weird that like I. And the music career that I tried to have just totally bridged that gap, like late 90s, early 2000s. That's when I was giving it my all. It was just such a...
It's when the industry died.
Too. I know, right? It was such a so frustrating, you know?
Oh, me too. Me too.
So, I was trying to do it the old way, right? I was going to like radio stations and record labels, and I was putting posters up and trying to play gigs and stuff like that. And I was just, you know, nose to the grind and doing it the old school way, and it wasn't getting me anywhere.
No, I know.
And then all of a sudden... People stop buying CDs too, right?
Yep, Napster, downloading. And that's when actually like more popular bands made more like in that bridging gap where they're not actually selling records, but people know who they are. That was sort of how the whole industry went, oh, it's not a matter about now how you sell records, it's how you play live. And if you play live, then that's where everybody's going to start making their money. You know,
$50 t-shirts and stuff.
Yeah. And I mean, the interesting thing about the music industry like today is that we have streaming, we have Spotify, we have Apple Music and things like that. The labels actually bought into that. So you know those motherfuckers are making way more money now than they did when they had to make CDs. And they're selling the content that they signed to Spotify for pennies on the dollar.
And I wonder what the difference between what the artist makes and what the label makes compared to what it was when they were making CDs. I wonder if that gap
I would hazard to guess that they're making more because there's no hardware to make it.
Yeah.
You're just dealing with infrastructure and you're dealing with, you know, Steve Earle when he plays, there's 1,000 songs or 1,000 plays a day or whatever on Spotify, he makes what? $10? Well, they're making all the money because they sold all that content to Spotify and they invested in it. It's creepy. I don't believe in Spotify. You know, I still think you should go buy your music.
I don't believe in it. I don't know how to use it. Well, I know how to use it, but I mean, I just don't like it. It just feels so... I don't get the value out of it. Like, I know it's there, but I just don't... Like, it sounds better when I own it and when I press the button or I drop the needle on it or I,
yeah,
you know what I mean?
Rather
than just hit a...
Yeah. Well, here, I got a soundbite that'll work. It's Fort Pierre talking about recording.
Yeah.
Conductors in the earliest days of recording just thought, this is a gimmick. This is never going to, you know, like they didn't take it seriously. And, you know, I've read old interviews with a lot of them. It's like, why would anybody listen to music which has already happened?
It's true, man. Live music is where it's at. Like,
yeah. But it's interesting because these are old dudes and like whatever at the time when recordings were just starting to like come to fruition of someone could listen to it sounded like shit. You know what
See,
I mean?
That's we're laughing at that. That's how we're gonna sound. That's how we're gonna sound in like 20, 30 years from now.
Yeah, that's true. Get with it, man. You don't have the kinetic hookup in the back of your brain now that digitally connects you with all music.
Just have it zapped into your mind.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's.
They're conducting like a whole thing, and it's a whole different thing.
It's an experience, you know. And if you're a conductor in front of 50 people, and you're getting music from waving your arms around and reading music, and it's all coming into just one spot where you're standing, that's where all the music sounds good. I don't know if you've ever stood there during
the conductor's spot. Is the sweet spot.
It is
the whole building.
Oh my god, it's the best sounding seat in the house.
Yeah,
you know, and they have everything, and the reason there's like. Certain types of arm waving and things and how the conducting it's a pretty special, you know, knack. The interest, I mean, you're right, it does sort of, it's a metaphor for what we're all talking about now in a way.
Yeah, it's different though.
Mm-hmm.
Like the whole recorded music thing was in the whole is like the companion piece to the live performance. With music, you have a live performance and you record a music report performance, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Recording in the studio and then performing live on stage. Like, I like how there's the dichotomy between the two, you know?
Mm-hmm. No, it's a good point. Because you can take it home and listen to it in your car on the way home.
Yeah.
I mean, they were like, what's a car? You know, like, my car has a record player in it. We can't drive while we're listening to my records.
Yeah.
There's
the other argument, too, that you can create music in a recorded setting that you can't perform live ever just because of logistics.
And what's interesting is how bands will take a recording and take it on the road. And there's like bands that sort of somehow can make that sound like the record without sort of any trickery.
Yeah.
And they'll reinvent songs. Like Wilco is famous for stuff like that. Well, they'll take a song and reinvent it live and they'll do a whole different version of it. And like Neil Finn, Crowded House, one of my favorite artists ever, he does things like that where he'll rewrite his own songs.
Yeah. After you're playing for a while and.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of bands.
Neil Finn did this thing where he was doing Don't Dream It's Over and then sang Dream, Dream, Dream over top of the chords of Don't Dream It's Over. And I've been looking for ever to try and find that YouTube. It's somewhere on YouTube where
he did it one night. It was just a
one
thing?
Show and it was live and he's like, Dream, Dream, Dream. And I'm like, and it was like, I was watching it at work and I was almost crying on how beautiful.
You're always a big Crowded House fan.
Oh, the biggest. Yeah. I met Neil Finn and I was like, shaky, starstruck, like kind of how you are with Bruce Springsteen.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like super like, oh my God, because Split Enz also was one of my favorite bands of all time. Like I love Split Enz. I'm really big fan of Neil Finn and Tim Finn and the Finn Brothers and Crowded House, and I own almost every single thing they've ever done, bootlegs and things like that. So, and they recorded every show they played.
Wow, they're one of those bands.
So
that's
you
awesome.
Would, their greatest hits was they had a live album, which was like live recordings. Actually, John Carr's we were talking about, gave it to me for my wedding present because he knew how much I wanted it. It was on back order. So he had ordered it for me and it hadn't come in. So he bought it and brought it up to the wedding and gave it to me as a wedding present. Yeah.
You probably enjoyed that more than the wedding.
Absolutely. It was the best. It was the best. And John was very thoughtful that way because he would order all these silly things, great things for me.
Yeah, yeah.
He was a good person to have around in the Pickering. I don't go to Pickering Town Center anymore to buy. I'm not buying Christmas presents from Pickering Town Center anymore. I'm not going anywhere. I'm staying in town.
Like you buy them all in Uxbridge?
I'm buying them all in Uxbridge. Yeah. Buying them local. You know, I'm trying it this year. Maybe we'll see what happens with the results from the children. We have a Walmart in town, though, so there's a bit of cheating going on. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Walmart's tough to shop at. Sometimes you have to go there, though.
Yeah. Socks and underwear. Okay. Well, what can we talk about here? I like the fact that, I mean, that one is okay, but let's talk a little bit about the love of music. This is Lisa McEwen talking about the difference in playing for money and for the love.
Well, yeah, there is that fine line too with, okay, do I want to do this to be paid? And if I do, I have to kind of play by the rules of the game. And that, you know, a lot of hardship comes with that. Yeah. And if you just want to do it for your enjoyment, that's a totally different thing. And then, you know, then like you say, then that can be sort of something that you hold just something special for yourself.
You see, she's rationalizing between professional, being a professional, because she was a professional musician.
Yeah.
And now she's sort of rationalizing what happened with her story. She got pregnant and all her label and her publicist, they all dropped her.
Dropped her, yeah.
Ironically.
You can't get maternity leave from your record deal.
No, apparently you can't. You can't. Or be at least some sort of lawsuit she could, based on the fact that they could say, oh, you weren't writing good songs anymore. Yeah, because I had a bump on my belly. Mm. Like, but she rationalized the whole thing about saying, like, playing for music. What sort of struck a chord with me is that you have to play by the rules. And there is a strict regimen of rules.
It depends what kind of artist you want to be, right?
If you want to, like, want to write music, like, consumable music, you know, whether it be country, whether it be pop, whether it be anything, soft rock or whatever, to consumable music by the masses. Because people write music now and they think about certain things like, well, country's good, you know, so I'm gonna put a lot of country in my song.
Yeah,
you know. And then even though they're not really into country, they're gonna write a song that sounds like, I had somebody on here and they talked about the exercise of writing in genres.
Writing a song that you just, yeah,
you know. And to me, there's a sort of a limited, to me, I don't agree with that very much. I think what I end up doing, though, if I work with a band that doesn't sound like anything I do, I end up kind of writing songs like them because it's something I've been listening to for all that period of time.
But you have to want to like it. You have to want to write a song. Like, if you don't like reggae music, how are you going to write a reggae song? You know what I'm saying? You know, it's just an exercise. I'm going to write a jazz song, but I don't like jazz at all. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I mean,
like, you have to have a passion for the music, you know, like to...
Yeah, stick to what you know.
Yeah, it has to be influenced.
Yeah.
To be influenced by, you know?
The influence I get, you know, what I've always found very tricky is, like, if you wanted to write an homage to the Beatles or an homage to the Rolling Stones, there's really a lot of, like, you can throw up a lot of
cliches and stuff.
And things. But one thing I do like when I hear in like a song I've heard of a band I respect and I hear them pull something, you're like, I know exactly where you got that from.
Yeah. But it's natural, though.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, you'll hear, if a band's just like, going through the cliches, you'll hear it and it'll be like, yeah. But then you'll hear a band that's actually influenced by the Beatles, like Cheap Trick or ELO. Yeah. And you'll be like, oh, I know where they got that from. You know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I mean, I think we've spoke about this, about honesty in music and how the two should never separate. You know, you should be very honest about what you do. And if you're trying to convince somebody, and the whole thing also comes with the fact that you're writing what you know and what influences you. I mean, it's a different conversation, but the music that you write, the music I write, is music influenced by other people. Who are these people that come up with, like, we're so few and far between by finding musicians who invent music that doesn't sound like completely wacky, weird. Like, we'll never have a spot for Frank Zappa in this world anymore.
Well, there's only a few guys like that. Jimi Hendrix, right? Elvis Presley.
Yeah.
Frank Zappa, guys that like are from a different planet, and it's just something is being channeled through them, and they're creating entire genres, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And from there, and you know, when you think about bands like Yes. Yes was influenced by the Beatles in the early days, but then they just went off and did something that's like, okay, they're writing consumable music that's 8 minutes long. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like Heart of the Sunrise and stuff, like music that's like, that's a rocker. But I mean, you hear like, I don't know. So you think about
it. It's a combination of good songwriting and good musicians, you know?
And yeah, but how and where in what room did someone write All Good People and say, like, hey, I like this song? And then it's almost like a whole other way of inventing folk and rock and all putting together.
Yeah.
Nobody.
It's art, man. It's art. It's all. Everybody's got their moment, you know?
Yeah, but nobody thought about that in a board meeting and went, I think you should guys go write some music that sounds like this and that. Nobody told them what to do.
Yeah.
Like a band like Genesis. A band like...
Well, that's the good stuff, right? A record company's never going to create anything good.
Yeah.
Except for the Monkees.
But
that was brilliant. The Monkees were brilliant. That was the one great record company coup.
Yeah. But I think my point is that there's no room for that anymore, where artists can really stretch and grow as artists and perhaps reinvent something.
Sgt.
Pepper's would never, ever, ever be created today?
So many classic albums would never be.
And if it was, it wouldn't have the impact. Like Sgt. Pepper's, when it first came out at number one, it stayed on the charts for what? I don't know how many weeks, over 20.
Yeah.
You know, and you're like, and that's the weird, you know, that's a weird album. If you really put it all together, like that's not, you know,
yeah,
it's got some hits on there, but it's like,
that's my least favorite Beatles record.
Probably. It's interesting, but I mean, we don't have that anymore. Yeah. We won't have, we have that. I mean, there's a German guy I see who has this weird headpiece and goes, la, 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 and that's the weirdest music. You know what I mean? Like, liking that would be because you don't like your friends. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Well, there's still great music out there. It's just not in the mainstream. You got to look for it, you know? And
yeah. I've been trying to get into like sort of Americana, rootsy, kind of quiet, but modernish. Like there's stuff.
Like hipster music? Guys in vests and
not
beards?
Not guys in vests and beards. Maybe like, I don't know. Like maybe just finding music that I can, like, because even today I made a vested interest just by looking. What is music and searching music that's not my wheelhouse?
Yeah. And I try every once in a while. I don't last long, though.
Mm-hmm. You know how long it took me to get into Elvis Costello? It took after when Armed Forces came in, what, 77, 78?
I don't know. I'm not a big Elvis
Costello. Well, when I got into Elvis, that record, I was, yeah, it was in 1995. It took, I was so scared of being into that big, open, yeah, you know, vestige of music where it's like, this is too much for me. You know what I mean?
There's a lot of good music out there. That's the thing with new artists. Like, that's why I don't really, you know, I give it a shot, but there's still songs from like the 60s I haven't heard yet. So like, I'm not done listening to all that stuff yet. Yeah. I don't have time for some new guy who's supposed to be really good.
Yeah, but I think it's an interesting thought that if you did find something, it might actually snowball into getting to different avenues.
Yeah, and, true.
You know?
I try. I just don't hear it.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, one day.
One day.
One day. What do we got here? Ambition in Music. Zach Gehring plays a band called Demons. He's from the States. He plays in also another band called May, which I believe are a, I think they're a Christian emo band. That's a big thing down there in the United
States. Christian and emo.
Yeah, Christian.
You're emotional and
emo. But there, you should hear, maybe I'll play some Demons before. You might like it. It sounds like, I'll show you. Right. Yeah, here it is.
I think ambition is as necessary as it is poisonous. And so when you get people that become really ambitious, you start to see these other sides of people. And so how do you kind of balance ambition and kind of fun?
You see him, you hear him catch himself thinking of too much. Yeah, he went, fun.
What's the word I'm looking for?
Fun. Yeah.
Ambition and fun. What are you saying? Like, it's not fun to, like, work hard?
Well,
you got to make your work fun. That's the thing. That's how you succeed in life, right? If you if you make your work fun, you keep working. That's,
I think what he was trying to say is that when you try too hard, it can show. And if you, it kind of says what we were listening to before, up the earlier, is about honesty in music and trying should all be like a one thing, you know, you're trying, it should all feed itself. Like, I'm trying really hard. I'm trying hard to be the best musician I can be. That's a whole big difference than saying I want to be the biggest band in the world.
Yeah.
Some people say that as well. You're trying very hard to be the best musician you can be, to not, you know, to be welcome to anything that comes to you. Because that's the other thing. If you just say, all I want to be is Gene Simmons, I want to be in the band like Kiss, and I want to be a rock star.
Yeah.
You're kind of closing yourself off to any other possibilities, and there's only one solution you're looking for, one endpoint. What he's kind of saying is that I'm good to go wherever I need to go that makes me happy. And that's what I kind of, this struck me as an invaluable thing to any musician who's tried and is trying.
Yeah, well, you gotta focus your ambition to where you're gonna have fun, right?
Yeah.
Just like, I don't know, like work hard where you want to work hard.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know.
And where it comes from, though, is important as well as why you're doing it. Because if you're trying to do it to be the biggest rock star in the world, then maybe that's not. Maybe that's, you should lower your expectations a little
well,
bit.
Well, yeah, that's an unrealistic dream these days, right?
But yeah. But everybody, you know, everybody in the back of their mind's like, eh, if I play a little guitar, maybe, you know, make it lucky. And that's the thing. That's what people.
Yeah, you just got to focus. You got to analyze what kind of success you want. Right? What is your definition of success?
Yeah.
Maybe you have to be the biggest rock star in the world, and maybe there's guys like, I don't know, Michael Jackson or Prince or that had that, you know, that they had that drive. That's what they wanted, and that's how they got there.
Mm-hmm. Do you think Michael Jackson wanted to be Michael Jackson at the end of it all, though?
I don't know.
It's tricky.
Michael Jackson, the artist or the pop star, you know?
Just in the all-encompassing, because when you become that famous, you kind of start becoming the person people expect mm-hmm. you to be. You know, I think he even messed with his own voice to talk. Like, when he was in public, he would talk higher. You know, like, that was his... That was, that's what people expected. That's
weird, his story, eh?
Yeah.
Like, I think he's a talent. There's no denying the talent and the artist that he is, right? But he just got away from him and turned into something else. And
well, that's the problems of success, is that if you're not capable of receiving it, the accolades,
dealing with it, yeah, you know,
then you're going to turn into somebody who expects it all the time. And like, how difficult would it be if you got a gold record on your wall from being you, and then your next record is a complete failure? What does that make you feel like? Like, have you ever considered stuff like that? Like, I kind of have, but I thought,
yeah,
doing your best work in your early days, and then never, ever being able to recreate yeah. that happens all the time.
And being more proud about a piece of art that you worked hard at, yet let this thing over here yeah. that was just fabricated and not real, is that's the yeah. thing everybody wants to hear. Well, that's why Del Shannon shot himself, right? Yeah. Runaway, that song. You couldn't get away from it.
No, and that's the, you know, and people get better at what they do as they get older. You become a better woodworker. You become a better yeah. typer. You become a better runner, or whatever things that you do that you work at, you become better at when you get, and if you're in your early 20s and you become this big, massive star, and then the next three records you put out are complete failures, I don't know what that would do to me.
There's a... I'll plug another podcast. There's a podcast called The Hustle with this guy, John, I'm going to get his name wrong, John Lamoureux or something like that. And he talks of one-hit wonders and these guys that had this one, you know, bit of stardom over here, and then they haven't been able to touch it since, and how that's affected their lives and stuff like that. And it's an interesting thing, mm-hmm. you know, talking to these people that have, you know, been to the top of the mountain and they haven't been there.
Yeah,
they're constantly living up in this shadow, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, when you think about all that, I think the slow grow is better as an artist. Like, if you find you're writing better songs in your 40s than you did when you're 20, obviously you're gonna. You're smarter. You're not. You know, when you're 20, think about when you were 20.
Yeah.
How stupid were you? How stupid was I?
I know, everybody, right?
You know what I mean? Like, and now.
But
you're,
sometimes you can catch lightning in a bottle, and you have this one moment, and you write this prophetic thing, and.
Yeah. I mean, well,
that's
I mean,
your moment or whatever, you know.
Even yeah, Jim Morrison, same thing. Anybody who died at 28 obviously had that.
Yeah. The 27 Club.
The 27,
Kurt
yeah.
Kurt Cobain.
Yep. Janis Joplin. Jimi Hendrix.
Jim Morrison.
Gigi Allen.
He was 27.
I don't know. Lightning in a bottle.
There's a bunch. I should know there's a bunch. There's about 20 of them.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Amy Winehouse.
Mm-hmm.
She was one.
It's being able to cope with the success, but you can't do that when you're 20. You know, you can't cope with your own home runs at that point. Mm-hmm. So how are you gonna rise to the top? Well, let's see what we got here. Where are we going here? What one catches your fancy?
Another great moment from the year.
Oh, this guy, Chris Ashworth, he invented the software I use every day. It's called QLab. And anybody that knows this program, QLab, it's amazing how accessible this guy was. Like, there's sold millions and millions of copies of this software. And every theater and every touring company that uses, like Cirque du Soleil uses this, big theaters all over the world, everybody uses it. I use it every single day. And I emailed the guy.
It's audio software.
Audio and video software. And now they do lights. It's an automated sort of thing where you can plug it into a lighting board and it will automate light, sound, and everything and make yourself. You hit one button and it plays. I emailed the guy thinking, I'm never going to hear from this guy. And the guy emails me back the same day. You know, I it was just this amazing thing. We had this weird connection because I've been making these controller boxes that run his software. So I would post. I made these little artistic ones like that up there. There's this one that looks, you know, neat stuff and post on Twitter. And he would like it and retweet it. And I would get like thousands of people like liking it because
because of his followers.
Yeah. So emailed me right back. You know, I tried the same thing to get the guys who invented DigiDesign Pro Tools. Nothing.
Too busy.
Yeah, well, the one guy is the CEO of Dolby Logistics. Okay. One of the two guys. But it's him talking about artificial intelligence and software, saying, well, just here.
One thing I hate is when software tries to think for me. And so I don't want I don't want the software to make my decisions, but I want the software to make my decisions way easier to accomplish. And that's kind of what it entirely boils down to. And so something that we're just never going to stop working on is trying to find ways to keep working on that.
So do you catch what he's saying there?
A little bit. He's talking about like software, like assuming what you want to do, even though you might want to go around outside of the box and do something different, but it's not letting you do this because why would you do this?
It's like autocorrect on your phone.
Yes.
You know, and it'll tell you the wrong word sometimes.
Yeah, that's so frustrating.
It's kind of what he's trying to get at is that why make things too simple? You know, why not find the solutions? He also says some really interesting things about people don't understand the other side. You see your screen, you see they point your mouse at stuff, but it's tough to understand. There was a guy who said the exact same thing, Dejan Martineau, like last week. He just missed that window of opportunity. Yeah. But he said almost the same thing. Was like, nobody really understands what happens in the box. They point their mouse, they click on stuff, and stuff happens. But there's no real, like, how did that happen?
Right.
They didn't know that it probably took some guy 100 hours of coding
to figure out how to do that.
How to do that one thing. And all it is keeps piling all the code on top of each other until it becomes your computer. And I found it really interesting because it's like, I want to be able to control my computer, but I don't want Skynet coming in and, you know, turning all the lights off. You know?
It's a fine line, right? Where do your software guys are different that way. They got to be able to see things process oriented and see behind the scenes and how things are going to, you know.
Yeah.
Cause and effect, right?
His big thing too is that he is not only a theater major, but he's a computer science major. So he's like a deadly combination. So he wrote that software because some friends were going to the Fringe Festival in Edinburgh, and they all happened with Macintosh. So they can only wrote the code. He wrote all the code on a Macintosh, like evenings and weekends, and it turned into this big old industry. He's like, I didn't know how to start a business. Yeah. He's just some guy. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's just an amazing success story. And you can really relate a lot of his success to music, where I didn't know what I was doing. It just happened. Like, I became famous. And you know, like, and a lot of people who have that aura of, they feel very blessed and lucky, but they somehow did it. And finding out, you know, how they did it, it's always like this simplistic, like, I just did these three things, and it was simple. You know what I mean? People that really work at it generally don't get into that situation. Usually sort of half of them don't make, well, most of them don't make it. The other half, like when they make it, they're kind of hard to work for and work with.
Yeah, you just got to see things from a different point of view sometimes, right?
Yeah, but they feel lucky and blessed and they don't understand well. No, you probably put some things together that made your success.
Yeah.
You didn't engineer your success because 99.9% of success in the music industry or the computer industry in this point is by luck. You make something, people want it. And then when you give it to them or sell it to them, you get compensated for it. I mean, that's sort of the simplistic way of looking at the music industry. And I just thought what he said was kind of an interesting thing.
Yeah, that's neat.
Yeah, there's a whole industry now in like how... as we get older, like the user interface stuff, it's a college degree that people get, like to how to set up a screen to make it easy to look. Because as we get older, you know, our parents, like my mom's got an iPhone, my dad's got an iPhone. It's like, where, you know what I mean? Like, and it's usable. A baby can use it and a 90-year-old man can use it.
I guess, right? Yeah.
And that's what making these things so simple.
They can use it, but do they understand it though, right? That's the thing.
Well, they
like the behind-the-scenes stuff, like you press a button, why isn't it working? Oh, I don't know. Like the one thing with computers that drives me fucking nuts is when something's not working and there's no way to determine what it is because it's you can't see it. It's something that should be working, but it's not working. So you have to kind of deduce all these kind of problem-solving skills to figure out what it is. And with computers, it's so tricky sometimes, right?
Yeah, and everything has a reason. That's the other thing I keep thinking is like, it's not something that...
Like, I like cars. If I'm working on an engine on a car, sometimes you if you know, if it's not hot in your car, your heater is broken. So you can figure out where things are not working. You can see it, right? You're hands on, but with a computer, it's so difficult.
Yeah. Well, there's, I mean, obviously the fundamental knowledge, like what I've noticed, like with anything, not just with the computers or whatever, because I've been getting into these little computers. There's a little computer back here called Raspberry Pi.
Yeah.
It's the size of a credit card. It's more powerful than this computer.
Really?
Yeah. So I actually am trying to get the inventor of this thing on my, I somehow got in touch with him through Twitter. So he might come on my show. I'm becoming a tech show fast. So, what the idea is like, I think I got derailed there. What was I talking about? I forget what I was talking about.
Yeah, I don't know. We were talking about computer guys and like software and looking at things from different angles.
Yes. So, okay, I'm back on it. So when you determine a problem.
Problem solving.
Yeah. The problem becomes a lot easier when you fix it. It takes you a long time to fix a little problem. And then when you fix that little problem, it becomes a smaller problem, because then you can anticipate
it happening again. If it happens again, this is how you do it.
There's people I work with who have no like critical thinking, where it's like they're trying to over engineer why there's something wrong, and they'll blame the power. They'll blame the earth before they blame the fact that maybe you keystroke something in wrong.
Yeah.
You know, so there's sort of like a being able to blame the machine. 9 times out of 10, it's probably the person operating it, you know.
Well, maybe 7 times out of 10. I have a lot of machine failure lately.
There are some people that have that problem where they're around cell phones and they blow them up.
Yeah.
My buddy Kevin Saulnier, Toad, he has that problem, and he apparently no phones like work around him. Every time he touches it, it breaks and stuff.
Got some sort of magnetic pull in his hand.
I think he's an alien from another planet. Yeah. Yeah.
I'd be surprised.
Yeah. Let's listen to Eric Weller talking about punk. Eric Weller was the creator and the owner of a record label called Meathead Records. He had a band called Head Cramp on his record label. He also put out like compilation records for like bands all over Canada. But now he works at a college, and he teaches film and video at a college up in Thunder Bay.
The do-it-yourself ethic, the DIY ethic, and being from Thunder Bay, where we don't have a lot of resources, and you have to be inventive and creative to get what you need. But yeah, having the whole punk rock do it yourself ethic. Well, we don't need to have this or this. We can make do with these things. All right, you don't need a $40,000 projector. What do you know? The one that's $6,000 or less or whatever isn't as good, but it's pretty close. If it breaks, we'll just buy another one. You know, we're saving so much money. That whole approach to things. You know, and again, with the music business, and especially with the film business, it's all about rolling with the punches. It's all about problem solving. Things break, you got to fix it, or things change, you got to adapt and move on, and that sort of thing. So certainly everything from the days of being on the road to you know, screwing around with recording, to the record label and everything, it's all been a wonderful foundation.
So kind of what he's saying is that it takes a bunch of things to put together to get where you're going.
Yeah.
You know, and that's sort of a key in life. It's like, if you stop doing what you enjoy to do more things that you enjoy to do, then you're just going to stagnate, and you might not be able to put all the parts together to make something, you know, interesting in your life.
Yeah, there's going to be speed bumps in your way. You just got to get over them, right? You just got to figure out how to get to the next step, whatever's going to get in your way.
And all the key elements, like putting it together, they all do somehow come together. The closest thing I can relate to is that I like to do 3D printing and design stuff in 3D printing, but it's turned into this weird little cottage industry where like I can sell these boxes to like people in Switzerland, you know, like where like they want it. And it's like, I just like to design them, you know, and I've sold like 8 of them. I'm not making $1 million, but I designed the thing from nothing, you know, and it came out of my brain. Like,
you put the design together, you're playing together, right?
Yeah. And then I got these little controller boards and I programmed them, and I had no idea how to do any of this stuff like 5 or 6 years ago. I wanted to learn how to design websites, and then I wanted to learn how that works, and then I figured out how it works, and then I want to figure out how some coding works.
Yeah.
Like, I'm 48 years old this year, next year, you know, so it's like, it's big steps for me, you know, to figure out code and things like that, and I kind of figured it out, and I was talking to somebody like, I can read it, but I can't speak it, you know what I mean? So it's an interesting, you can look at something and kind of decipher what it's saying.
Well, that's amazing, man. Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, all those things sort of came together in that box there, you know, and that's sort of like, it's kind of keying into what he kind of said. It's like, if you kind of stop, you know, we were talking about putting out a podcast out. It's a stretch for me. It's a stretch for you. It's like, you're putting yourself out there and it's like, it all sort of has a reason, you know, like.
Yeah. It's good to put yourself out there, man. It's just like, try something new, like you have no idea about it, and your brain can learn new things. There's no, you can always keep learning. I just started taking boxing classes, right? And I'm intimidated. I'm a 43-year-old guy, and I'm here in a boxing class with all these tough 20-year-olds, you know? But it's fun, you know? And you learn it, and you make little steps, and it's a good feeling to accomplish stuff, right?
Yeah, so, yeah. My wife's taking karate.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's things that excite your brain. They don't necessarily have to be, you know,
stimulates your brain, right? They say that when you get older, just keep reading, right? There's nothing, always keep reading. Just keep your mind active, right?
Yeah.
You don't want your brain to fall asleep.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, getting stuck in a job or that you might not like, or a job that sort of is safe. I mean, a lot of people stay there. You know what I mean?
So, well, sometimes you have to stay there because it's income, right? And you're supporting your family or whatever, but you need to do something else. You need to take piano lessons. You need to read books, you need to get in some exercise, something that else can, you know, stimulate your senses, your brain,
and
something.
Yeah, and keeps you thinking. But I mean, it's not just the fact that you're learning to play the piano, you're learning to learn.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, a lot of people sort
the ability to learn and read and, you know, remember muscle memory. And
yeah, and you can put all that into other stuff that you do, whether it be, you know, playing tennis or something. You know what I mean? Like, it's like you're using thinking in different ways to make sure that you can achieve something, but you can't just go out and, like, whatever. You can't go out and jump out of an airplane and be a professional parachutist.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? You have to sort of figure out there's a few little steps you need to go. You
know, a couple, what I mean? Yeah.
Yeah, where you know, or if you want to be, you know, a concert violinist or a concert pianist, it's like, yeah, I'm just going to step behind the piano and start playing. It takes a lot of work, a lot of practice, and a lot of focus and a lot of attention. And it's funny, the most interesting people I meet who are like artists like that, they do other weird stuff. You're like, what, really?
On the side, yeah.
On the side. It's got nothing to do with what they actually do. You know, so.
Yeah, that's cool.
Well, that's cool. Let's do one more and then we can wrap this motherfucker up.
All right.
Okay, let's talk about Mark Belky, founder of SNFU, friend of mine. You ever meet Mark?
I don't know if I met him. I've seen that band a couple of times.
So. Yeah, Mark is the guitar player, ex-guitar player of SNFU. Lives in Victoria, has a child, is married, he works a job, and he's just a good dude. He's talking about being serious about music, and SNFU were sometimes far from that.
It has to be a pure, you know, expression of what you're trying to do, and you have to really just put it out there because you love it. And I know that SNFU, there's some songs that I listen to now that seemed very questionable to me, but I know we released them because we had a laugh, right?
Yeah.
Especially in some later songs that Chai's lyrics, I just laugh, right? It's like, this is such super ridiculous songs that never should have been released.
He's talking like some of their most famous songs, like Cannibal Cafe.
Yeah, well, it's a different time, man. Like, you know, they were probably in their early 20s and now they're in their early 40s or early 50s or whatever, and it's, you look back on on things you've done differently, you know.
Yeah, like, what he's talking about though is being, because a few times I'd asked Mark over the past 20 years, like, would you be interested in playing some guitar on a record I'm making? Never get a reply. Never hear anything. And he kind of, what he explained a little bit there without actually me asking him or holding him to it, is that you have to be 100% into it. If you're not 100% into it, his focus is like, well, if I can't focus all my energy into it, I am not going to waste my time.
Well, that's him. I know. I think other guys can do that, right? Like session musicians.
Yeah.
How do you become a world renowned session musician?
Yeah.
You know, like, you're playing on a guy's song, and you get a,
yeah. But that's his life. I mean, like, the very first thing he did in the early 20s was get in a van and go to Los Angeles and make a record, and then toured all over the place, and that's all he did for 20 something years.
Well, and, yeah, it's a different, there's nothing wrong with that either, but no, it's just a different kind of guy he is, right? He's just, he has to do it, he has to be into it. He's not into it for the sake of playing guitar, I guess. He just,
yeah, you know. No, I always find that because it's like, I don't know. I always found that a little bit interesting, like the way that thought process is. And I've always tried to get into the head of like, well, why can't you just do it? Not you just do it, having fun with
just
it.
Have fun with it. And who cares? It's just only rock and roll.
But. Yeah, yeah. He's making a kid's record. See, the thing is, it also, you say time is definitely something that makes you reassess your life and things. He's making a ukulele record for, because his son likes ukulele. So he's writing a whole record of ukulele songs. He had people play on it and stuff like that. So he's going to put a kid's record out. It's like, that's pretty cool because, but it, then again, he's doing it in his own way.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a serious thing for him. So,
well, there are artists that only can work that like that, right?
And yeah.
There's other artists that don't have to think.
Yeah.
Do different things.
Yeah, there's like artists out there that don't really like what they do, but they're good at it, so they just go out and do it like
it's their job, right?
It's their job. Like Kim Mitchell calls it plowing the field.
Yeah.
I'm going to go plow the field.
And there's nothing really wrong with that, man. Like, and I'm sure he enjoys it. You know, you get on stage and you play those songs, and but I don't know.
Yeah,
it's all different. Everybody's different, you know. Every situation is different.
Yeah,
it's good points and bad points about everything.
How dare you generalize on this show?
It's true, man. There's always a different way to look at something.
Yeah, no, I agree. And you know, I just thought, well, there's a few things. A lot, like I said before, a lot of it gives you like it's them sort of coming to this weird little epiphany by themselves. And the other part's like, oh, I like that because I can I can talk about that later. And I don't want to ruin the flow of the conversation by, let's talk about what you just said there for a second. You know, because then I can process what they say in my brain for a couple of days and then come back. And you're a bit of a disadvantage because I thought about, why don't I send these bites to Lee so he can actually listen to them ahead of time and come up with a thing. But last year I did this all by myself.
Oh, so, did you?
Yeah, it was a bit frightening.
Well, it's different when it's taken out of context when I haven't really heard the full interview, right? I'm just hearing the soundbite. What do you think about this guy? Am I interpret it wrong or interpret it?
No. Differently, you know, yeah. Well, I'm trying to, like I said, I'm trying to get it sort of like get that part. And it was interesting because it's like, do you relate to this the way I did when I first heard
it?
When
you first heard it, yeah.
You know, and some of it, yes, and some of it, no. You know, like,
yeah.
You know, some of the moments were like, you know, I'm a couple of beers in on the conversation and it's like, oh, that's cool. And I put the marker in there and I'll bring it back later. Believe me, there was way more of these. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like,
you had a bunch.
I did like, well, how many? I did 50 something episodes and I came up with 16 sound bites.
Yeah.
You know, but,
See, yeah. You could pick another 16 too, and we would have a whole different conversation about it.
Absolutely.
Going different ways. That's the beauty of podcasts.
Yeah.
And the beauty of conversations and engaging in people. And stuff
yeah.
Like that.
And we don't have a lot of that in this world anymore. I mean, we listen to podcasts in our cars and our walks. I think it's the whole new talk radio for us. You know, like, because my dad would listen to like some, like, you listen to talk radio or something, or parents would listen to talk radio. You know, like Sportsnet or something, and talk about.
And if it was really good, you would call in.
Yeah,
I got to talk about this, man.
Wait a minute. No, yeah. So this is our talk radio. This is us talking, you know, and making points, you know. And this isn't like this doesn't exist anymore, where you can actually come to a decision, and the listener wants us to get to that point. You know what I mean? And sort of, there's not like 20% of it is garbage. But there's some gold in there from time to time.
I always love the third person aspect of the podcast.
I've had three people on once.
Well, I mean the third person is as far as like the listener.
Yeah.
Like me and you were talking, and then who's ever listening to this has got their own opinions on what we're talking about, you know, and they're having their own kind of conversation in their head.
Yeah. Yeah, there are a lot of
either
people
like, oh, I agree with him, or he's full of shit.
A lot of people say that this is like being a fly on the wall. You know, they're listening in on a conversation that, you know, and you know, I just like, it comes back to doing the show and why I do the show. And it's moments like this, and we're like, oh, I've known you for over 20 something years.
Yeah.
And here we are having a talk. We're recording it, and you know, and
for prosperity, that's the thing too. It's like you have a record. Now here's me and my buddy talking for an hour.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Good times, right?
Well, you know, this is the sponsor, by the way. This is Bose All Natural.
Really? Yeah. I'm a fan of the sponsor.
Yeah, me too.
Lug Tread Beer.
Yeah, it's delicious. It goes down fresh.
600 milliliter bottle.
Yeah, big bottle. It's a big German bottle. You go to Germany, they have bottles like this. They don't fuck around in Germany.
All right. It expired about a couple weeks ago.
What?
I got a December 6th 17 on this bottle. It's still good.
Oh,
though.
No, that's really?
Oh, is that the brew date?
That's when it was brewed.
Oh, so it's fresh as hell. Yeah, then. Okay,
there you go. Well, cheers, man.
Yeah, cheers. Merry Christmas.
Happy Merry New Christmas. Year. Happy New Year. Absolutely. Another year gone, everybody. As I'm putting this together, it's actually January 1st in the morning, and it's immediately going out because last night I had worked till about 9 o'clock, came home, had watched the TV, and then went to bed immediately at 12:01. Because I'm tired. I'm tired, folks. Been working a bunch, and I'm tired. What's up for 2018? Well, I can tell you this, that it's going to be a Small Town Pistols reunion in August. I do know that I'll be doing some Lowest of the Low shows with Mr. Ron Hawkins and the band. And that's kind of what I do know. And I will be possibly doing some other work in other areas. I'm going to be finishing up this recording I did with Mr. Connor Lovett Frazier, as well as Mike Indovina. I think that project, it did sort of get a little bit in the weeds. And now it's coming out of the weeds and it's going to be, I think, a thing. And I wrote actually a new song last year about this, and we're going to put that on it. So it's probably an 8 songs. So it's a little bit surely becoming an LP as opposed to being an EP. But what can I say, everybody? Thank you so much for listening to the show every week. I know the winter gets quiet and people like to do other things, but the summer was the most amazing. You know, as it goes, in review, this was the most downloaded year of the 3 years I've been doing it. And I'm proud to say I've downloaded more episodes in the year 2017 than I did in 2015 and 2016 put together. So to me, that's progress. And I really appreciate that. I met some new publicists that are going to help me send out some stuff. One's very metal-centric. So there might be a whole month of just metal interviews. Because there's a guy who emailed me just out of the blue saying, I have a publicity company. I want to put some stuff on your podcast. And this is what it's all about, man. Doesn't matter what type of music it is. It can be, you know, as long as it's not shitty music. That's all that matters. Everybody, like I said, thank you so much for listening. Thank you, Lee, for doing the show with me. And thanks for coming all the way up and doing the show and in the basement. Keep coming back. I got some new ones coming up. I have yet to put them together. But I'm very excited about 2018. I'm very excited about it. I think it's going to be a great year. I think it's going to be lots of fun. I'm going to learn lots of stuff. And, yeah, have a good year. And have a good week. We'll see you. Bye.